Monday. Today is October the 7th, and you're listening to My Farm. Well, the farm bill is something that seems to have been overlooked at the end of the month as everything has sort of been going on in the news, and yet it technically expired. We're going to take a look at what that actually means and what the coming months could mean and the potential to get one passed in a lame duck session. We'll have that after this message from our sponsor.
Sponsored by Seed Consultants, simply the best value in the seed industry. Learn more at seedconsultants.com.
Taking a quick look at your agricultural headlines, with everything going on in the news, it sort of got overlooked, but the 2018 Farm Bill, which was extended last year until the end of fiscal year 2024, has expired once again. Now, what does that mean for the major farm and nutrition programs? Well, it is a little bit complicated, but some things that we should know, according to our friends at AgriPulse, in recent decades, it's not unusual for the Farm Bill programs to expire. When the 2002 Farm Bill expired, portions of it were extended six times in the spring of 2008 for less than a year in total, that according to the Congressional Research Service. And when the 2008 Farm Bill expired in 2012, some Farm Bill programs ceased new operations after October 1st of 2012. Others did continue under operations under some different appropriations acts. Now, the federal crop insurance program is permanently authorized. It does not need to be reauthorized by a Farm Bill. The SNAP program, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, which accounts for most of the spending in the Farm Bill, is reauthorized through appropriations bills and continuing resolutions. And as of today, the government is operating under a continuing resolution through December 20th. The Inflation Reduction Act extended four major conservation programs and their funding authority through fiscal year 2031. The end of the IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act funding window, would be the Environmental Quality Incentives Program, or EQIP, the Conservation Stewardship Program, the Ag Conservation Easements Program, and the Regional Conservation Partnership Program. The CRP, the Conservation Reserve Program, was not extended to 2031, so its authority expired back on Monday. The same is true for some programs, including the Healthy Forest Restoration Program and Watershed Rehabilitation Programs. The 2023 Farm Bill extensions continued authorization for commodity programs through the 2024 crop year, and that time period varies depending on the commodity. Dairy is the first commodity affected because authority for the Dairy Margin Coverage Program expires on December 31st. The 2024 crop year for other commodities extends until the harvest season, actually, for 2025 crops. Now, starting January 1st for dairy, with the end of the crop year for other commodities, price support programs revert back to how they were written in the 1940s, known as permanent law. Permanent law provides support based on a parity price from the 1910 to 1914 period that does not recognize productivity gains and technological advances in agriculture or modern marketing and policy approaches, that according to USDA's Economic Research Service. And when a farm bill expires, the ensuing January 1 has been dubbed the, quote, dairy cliff, because that's when permanent law kicks in for that commodity, requiring the USDA to begin taking steps to push up milk prices. Now, other things that could be affected by the expiration of a farm bill would be programs that rely on mandatory funding authorizations in the bill that are most affected, according to the CRS. Those include programs in the farm bill Title III, which is trade, Title VII, which is research, Title IX, which is energy, and X, which is horticulture, Title XI, which would then be miscellaneous things. And these programs represent about 1% of mandatory funding in the Farm Bill. Without reauthorization or an extension, these programs either may not have authority to operate or may not continue to receive new budget authority. And the 2023 extension provided authority and new mandatory funding for 19 of 21 small programs in the 2018 Farm Bill that did not have a budget baseline. Now, members of Congress are continuing to talk about the need for a new farm bill with an eye towards the possibility of passing a bill after the November 5th elections. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more after this message from our sponsor.
Williamson Crop Insurance, home of Decision Max. Decision Max allows you a simple solution to analyze your operation and make informed marketing and crop insurance decisions to mitigate your risks. Manage your whole operation in one place with the ability to blend counties, marketing, and insurance coverage to give a complete overview of your operation. Williamson Crop Insurance, protecting the Eastern Corn Belt since 1980. Learn more at cropcoverage.com.
Thanks, Joe. Let's change directions now. You know, the impacts associated with Hurricane Helene continue to be assessed days after that storm surge. High winds and heavy rains impacted wide areas of the southeast. USDA's Rod Bain tells us more.
A tale of a large-scale hurricane in three chapters. USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey breaks down the impacts of Hurricane Helene in the southeastern U.S. First,
if you look at from where Helene moved inland, from around Perry, Florida, all the way down the coast to below Tampa Bay, we saw a storm surge that not only exceeded the peak values of storm surge that we saw with Hurricane Idalia 13 months ago, but they were all-time record highs, partly because this area of Florida, the Big Bend region, just simply has not seen a major hurricane in recorded history going back more than 150 years.
A 9.3-foot storm surge was recorded in Cedar Key, Florida, east of where Helene Center made landfall, more than 2 feet higher than the previous record set by Hurricane Idalia last year. The second impact category associated with Hurricane Helene is wind-related.
The concern there was the fast-forward speed managed to push that narrow band of wind damage quite far inland, so we saw damage not only in the Florida Big Bend, where Helene moved ashore on late September 26th, but those damaging winds pushed into south-central Georgia, and then later as far north as the southern Appalachians, where we saw some hurricane-force wind gusts into northwestern South Carolina and even western North Carolina before the storm played out and began to lose tropical characteristics.
Yet Rippey acknowledges what Hurricane Helene will be most noted for is the devastating rains and flooding well far inland.
Hurricane Helene took a bit of a left turn once it moved inland. It got captured by a disturbance over the Mid-South, and that had the effect as the storm turned to the north and then the northwest. It was moving basically perpendicular to the southern Appalachians. And you took that tropical moisture, ran it into the high elevations, rising to almost 7,000 feet above sea level in western North Carolina, and that unleashed catastrophic rainfall.
Helene was preceded days earlier by heavy rains impacting western North Carolina and surrounding areas, with totals recorded such as 8 inches of accumulation in Asheville, North Carolina.
And that unleashed the historic and deadly flooding across western North Carolina and also adjacent areas into Tennessee, as well as southwestern Virginia, and even parts of Georgia and upstate South Carolina.
The combination of these impacts gives indication that Helene could be our nation's fifth $1 billion hurricane disaster in history.
The previous four, Hurricane Katrina in 2005, along with the twin 2017 storms, Harvey that hit Houston, Hurricane Maria that devastated Puerto Rico, and then in 2022, we had Hurricane Ian move into Florida's west coast just south of Tampa.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Thanks, Rod. That's what's making agricultural news on my farm. For my 102.7 WMYW, I'm Dusty Sonnenberg. You have a great day.